Okay. Let's call the meeting to order. Welcome to the Desert Healthcare District Board of Directors meeting. This is a planning session for all of us, and we're going to be going over a large amount of data that's been presented to us. It's also available online. We have our Board of Directors here that will have roll call in a minute and start the meeting.
Yeah, they're going to need to speak up.
Okay.
Did the fans are on back there?
They were working 5 minutes ago.
How are you, Dr. Duke?
I'm good. Kay, how are you?
It's nice to see you.
Test. Okay, let's get started. Welcome to the Desert Healthcare District Planning Session. This is a full day today and a half day tomorrow. We hope that we come out of this session looking at a large amount of data that will help us formulate a three-year plan for the future activities of our hospital, and basically have a full agenda. So let's get started with the roll call, please.
Director Zito?
Here.
Director Wortham?
Here.
Director Matthews?
Here.
Vice President Hayden?
Here.
And President Rogers?
Here. I'd like to introduce now our CEO, Herb Schultz, who will talk about the purpose of our special session.
Good afternoon, board members, and all of our community members coming today. I just have a few brief remarks before turning it over to our strategic planners. So as we've talked as a board, and as many of you have been involved in, this day and a half is a very, very organized effort, the start of a 3 to 4 month, very public, with hopefully significant input from the public, which we're receiving, process. The discussion and the activities today mostly will be facilitated by Bobby Wunsch and Rafael Gomez, who are over here from Pacific Health Consulting Group, and we're very, very pleased to have you. You will be focusing on, and any public comment will focus on, priorities and strategies. But I want to underscore that today is not a decision-making day. Today is a day to take the time And the energy and the resources. There's a lot of data, a lot of work that has been done over the past year, pretty much, that is getting filtered into the strategic planning process. And so again, today, priorities and strategies, not decision making. And along with that, different from all the other exercises that the board and prior boards have gone through around strategic planning, is that this is not the only strategic planning session. When we discuss 3 to 4 months, it's 3 to 4 months with significant, not only board meetings, community forums. There's already one scheduled. Assemblymember Garcia is co-hosting that one. Like this one, translation available, English and Spanish. And that'll be at the College of the Desert Indio campus at that point. But that is why, and one of the reasons that this is also different, and I think our community will see it, is that we've done something different. And that is that we have, as always, incredible expertise, you know, here that are going to be sharing the results of various work that they've done today, market assessment, and health needs assessment. But as a part of that, these presentations are being limited to 20 minutes. So everybody that has a packet of information will have not only the presentation, but for the first time a one-pager that basically says, here's the 5 to 7 top line results or issues or provisions, whatever it happens to be, that the consultants wanted to get across. So not only is it taking all of the information that they put together, but it'll be presented in 20 minutes, and you will have an hour as a board, again, a beginning conversation, but you'll have an hour as a board to work with and talk with the consultant, with Bobby facilitating those discussions. After each of those sessions, for anybody that has public comment, Mary Pannoni back there has handed out cards, and she will please turn them in because she will hand them to me, and I will call on various folks if you have a public comment. There's also a 7 to 8 p.m. time frame where it's all public comment, but in terms of anybody that has a public comment on any of the sessions today, after the 20-minute presentation and the board's hour, we will call on you for a 3 to 5 minute sort of, you know, question to the board. We know it's an aggressive timeline, and we know for the 3 to 4 months, that's aggressive. But also all of this in a day and a half is very aggressive. But again, this is the beginning, not the end, not a decision-making day, but to really sort of educate, learn, hear from, and begin to undertake the priority setting and the strategy setting. So I'm going to hand it over to Bobby.
Good afternoon. Thanks for gathering today for this important discussion at a very important day in Washington, and a day that will start to focus the state of California on health issues going forward. I wanted to start by just reminding everybody of the newly adopted vision for the district and the foundation, connecting the Coachella Valley residents to health and wellness services and programs through philanthropy, health facilities, information, and community education and public policy. And also a reminder of the mission of the district and the foundation to achieve optimal health at all stages of life for all district residents. I wanted to start with this because everything that we do and all the discussions that we'll have over the next 3 months really need to come back to how can we push forward the vision and the mission of the district and the foundation. Just a few words about why we do strategic planning. What we're looking to create over the next 3 months is a high-level directional plan to focus on several goals that will guide the work of the staff, the board of the district and the foundation, and the community in the work that you want to do together. This will be, if you can think of it, a roadmap for the next 3 years. And when we think of a roadmap, we're thinking of a highway map. We're not thinking of the Thomas Guide to Palm Springs with all the back alleys and the side streets. We're thinking of the major highways and roads that will take the work that the district and the foundation want to do to a destination. One of the areas that we'll focus on as part of the strategic plan, or what are the outcomes or accomplishments or results that the directors want to see at the end of the 3 years as part of the plan that we're going to formulate over the next few months? As we look at the plan and begin to evaluate both what goes in the plan and what the plan overall does, we want the plan to really articulate the strategic advantage and the unique role that the district and the foundation have here in the Valley. We want to make sure that as part of the planning process that we invite feedback from internal participants and externally, both community leaders, healthcare professionals, community residents, to give input to the thinking that the directors will have. And as Herb mentioned, and you'll hear more later in the day, we've had a number of discussions with community leaders and partners. There'll be 2 community forums that we hope will not only bring out community leaders, but also bring out community residents who have opinions on the issues ahead. And we expect that all the work that you'll hear that the consultants have done today and tomorrow will also really inform the thinking of the directors and provide real data on which to base the decisions that formulate the strategic plan. So this is a general outline of the timeline of the strategic plan. It's a fast-paced effort. Many organizations take 6 months to a year to do this kind of work. The board urged us to move quickly because there's so much work ahead, and we took that very seriously. As we've mentioned, there'll be community forums in April. They'll be well publicized. The board will meet again on April 25th to consider the strategic plan, next step, and the next draft. There may be another special board meeting in early May to incorporate the feedback from the community forums into the thinking of the directors. During late April and through May, we'll develop an implementation work plan, a budget proposal, and a timeline for the first year of the strategic plan. And then, hopefully at the May board meeting, the board will, after having seen several drafts of the plan, have a chance to give feedback on a final draft and perhaps adopt the final strategic plan, either at the May meeting or perhaps at the June meeting, depending on the feedback. So again, I just want to underscore that the purpose of today is really to engage with the directors on their ideas and their thoughts, to hear public comment on many of the different topics. And we're going to now start the agenda with two presentations and discussions, a market analysis that Steve Valentine will present, and a community needs assessment that Jenna will present. And we, as Herb said, we want their presentations to be short, so we have plenty of time for the directors to ask them questions, for the directors to offer their own thoughts on the data that they've collected, and for us to really engage in a deep conversation about these issues. Everyone has received the materials in advance, and I know the directors have all spent a lot of time reviewing the materials and thinking about the issues that are important to discuss. So any questions to start with from the directors before we turn the mic over to Steve? Okay.
I just got a quick question.
Sure.
Mark,
why don't you use this?
Yeah, the two community forums from April 1st to 15th. Do you have the dates and locations?
April 11th.
April 11th in Indio with the College of the Desert Campus, co-hosted by Assemblymember Garcia. We are finalizing West Valley one, so probably by early next week at the latest, we will have that. But it'll probably be, you know, a couple days after that, if you will. But the first one is April 11th.
Thank you.
The maintenance on the microphones. We have to stop the meeting for 10 minutes and then sort of work that out. We have asked during break, so we'll use this mic for now so that we don't stop the meeting, and then Mike and his team will come back during the break and fix them. We can turn down that machine.
Okay, any other questions from the directors before Steve starts? Okay, well, I think everybody's received Steve Valentine's market analysis. It's deep and rich with much data, and Steve's going to review the highlights, and then we'll have a chance to engage in a conversation with him.
Great, thank you. Good afternoon, I'm Steve Valentine. I'm a vice president with Premier Health Solutions. We're a healthcare firm that's based in Charlotte, North Carolina. I have done a fair amount of work with the district over the years. I'm familiar with the area and have done work with all the hospitals in the area as well as some of the physician organizations, medical groups, and IPAs. So we were asked to give you a sense of what's going on in the Valley, and we've looked at it from a needs perspective, how the hospitals are being utilized, We can tell you out migration, so patients that are here that are admitted elsewhere and for what services. So I'm going to hit some of those highlights. This is really a 20-minute summary of a 115-page report that is over there. There's a lot of information and it would take all day to go through it. So we're going to try to give you the highlights and then I'll do my best to answer questions. So we were really interested in looking at the service offerings of Desert Regional. We then looked at the service residents seek to organizations outside the area. That's the out-migration that I mentioned. Gaps in services. So are there services where maybe we don't have quite adequate capacity, that out-migration? I'll give you some commentary on maybe if we hear anything on what Congress is doing on the vote on the replaced plan, what the new plan might do in terms of impacting some of what I'm going to talk about. There will be an impact. Then I thought that we would try to see, again, some of the use of in and outpatient services, access to services. We did not do community interviews. That was not part of our assignment. That was done by others. So as we begin to look at the area, unfortunately, your area is really a pretty large health professional service area, shortage area. And the way the government defines this is they look to have primary care at approximately one primary care physician for every 3,500 people. And you don't meet that standard, so you would have fewer physicians in primary care. So that just tells us then that you would have some access issues. Some of that access issue is really trying to be addressed through retail health clinics you've heard about, urgent care centers, rural health clinics, FQHCs, the county clinics. So you have a number of others trying to fill that gap. But even when we try to take into account those providers, we still end up with a shortage in the community. The next map, and by the way, the blue is really the service area of the district of Desert Regional. And there's a little red, that is your district boundary. So you do draw a lot of patients from just outside your district. And the whole blue is the service area. So you can see you really draw a fair number of patients and service an area east of the district. This is a medically underserved area. So it's just a different definition. They use different criteria, a lot of overlap. The benefit to this is it does allow hospitals to recruit physicians to try to meet some of this community need. So hospitals, as you know, are very regulated. They're only allowed to do certain things. And in this case, they would have the ability to pay, recruit, and guarantee salaries of doctors when there's underserved areas. The key is they must be located in the underserved areas. So you can't take an underserved area over here and pay a doctor and put them where there's plenty of doctors. These numbers might be a little small, so I'll do my best. But what we do try to do is get a look at what is happening in terms of the population demographics in your area. So you'll see there's a high estimate, a low estimate, and then California. So we benchmark against California. We're trying to show you the population in 2016, 2021, 2026. So look to the future. We begin to plan about what needs would be. Then we typically put the populations as best we can into age groups. So we use various demographic sources to then allocate the population into age groups. So typically, in the 0 to 14, that would be the pediatric population. And then you would see the 65 plus tends to be kind of that Medicare population. So one thing that will stand out to you pretty significantly is when you compare the high estimate where we account for in-migration of people, so your seasonal population, the immigrant population, you have approximately 100,000 people were the estimates that we're able to identify. But what I want you to do is focus on the percentages of the high estimate, low estimate against California. So what you begin to see is you have a significantly older population, which is no surprise to you. But they do use healthcare significantly more and have more chronic disease. So it impacts the healthcare needs, the types of services you offer, and the demand, the push, for the kinds of inpatient and outpatient services that would be provided. The other thing we identify a few is typically women of the childbearing age, which is 15 to 44, and you kind of get a sense that yours is lower as a percent compared to California. So that would reduce proportionately the numbers of births and deliveries. So that would impact obstetric units. On the next page, we try going through again, and here we just use the high estimate. So this would include the additional 100,000 people. And we would ask you to, again, look at the 65-plus population area. So it is fast-growing. That's the baby boomer population. That's the people living longer population. And this is going to drive healthcare resource needs higher. So compared to, you can see, below California, you're about double the 65-plus population as a percentage. So this has a big impact, again, on the chronic disease areas. This has a big drive, if you will, in terms of the need for inpatient beds. These kinds of beds would be primarily the acute care beds called medical surgical and critical care beds. Pediatric beds are tied to the pediatric population. Perinatology or the OB beds are tied to women of the childbearing age. Also with a high 65 plus population, they tend to use the outpatient services more, as well as the ED. The ED will become important. There's been, when we expanded our Medi-Cal program in California, we just about doubled the visits into emergency rooms, and we upped the use of hospitals, meaning admissions. So depending upon what happens with the new Medi-Cal block grants, should they reduce the population of Medi-Cal that is covered under an expanded Medi-Cal program, that would have a negative impact on utilization of healthcare resources. It would have a negative impact on the hospitals with bad debt. It would be negative to the doctors, bad debt. It would be negative to the doctors in terms of unpaid patients. Many doctors do not charge a Medi-Cal patient for a Medi-Cal visit because it costs them more in paperwork than it does in actually getting paid. So what this is just telling us, there will be a big impact in terms of what the healthcare needs will be within the community. On the next slide, again, this would be the low or more of the permanent population. When I've been meeting with some of the members of the board and we've been reviewing all this information, I threw out a good rule of thumb for you, which is typically you would plan on about 1.2 to 1.5 beds, acute care beds, for every 1,000 people. You would be on potentially the higher range of that because of the high elderly percent of patients you have. You should also know over time, and I'll show you a slide, that the use of inpatient hospitals, while the raw volume is going up of discharges, per capita use of hospitals is in decline. Per capita use of outpatient services, going up. Someone asked me last night at a similar meeting I was doing like this in Northern California, they said, well, geez, with the advent of all the retail centers, urgent care centers, aren't all the visits to doctor's offices going down? And the answer is no. What it's actually doing is increasing the spend because it's not really an alternative to going to a doctor or an admission. It's just an easier, convenient way to get care that is typically someone will still go see a doctor afterwards anyways. So it's been additive, not really a spend reducer, if you will. Which a lot of the health plans, by the way, thought by offering retail coverage, urgent care, it would help reduce spend, and it's not really done that. Okay, and then we looked at, in the particular area, pediatrics. And as we looked at some of the pediatric areas here, it was important to note that number one, and you'll see it in a later chart, most all the pediatric care, other than neonatology, is leaving the area, obviously, and going to Loma Linda. There is a fair amount of pediatric general surgery remaining in the community, and neonate babies are remaining in the community. So you don't have anything that would be unusual in terms of the pediatric care in that regard, but what we do note is in the mental health treatment area, this has typically been underfunded and underutilized for adults and pediatric patients. Typically, it's not an area where there's much money that is allocated. And because of that, most people would prefer to and are designed to take adult patients versus pediatric patients. Payment is better on the adult patient than the pediatric, but for both pediatric and adult, it's a much worse payment than adult general care. So they would rather reduce site capacity, increase other kinds of capacity, because it's economically more attractive to them. But these just give you some of the sense of what's kind of going on. The one that is a major concern, obviously, with in addition to mental health, is the obesity. That is going to be a big driver in terms of your clinic use. That's going to be a big driver in terms of physician use, and will eventually result in other chronic diseases. On this slide, what we tried to present to you is to give you a trend of what is happening on the inpatient use of hospitals. So we took your service area, remember the map in the blue, all those patients for each of those years, what services were they admitted for? So this tells you, this is kind of like an incidence of disease from an inpatient perspective. You have the service lines on the left, you have the years going to the right, and of note, if you look at the bottom, you see about 75 discharges per 1,000 people dropping to 71. This is the per capita use of inpatient facilities is going down. This was the design of HMOs, of Obamacare with accountable care organizations, bundled payment, patient-centered medical homes. All the new care models we have are designed and are working to reduce inpatient use of facilities. You can see from the red and some of the black areas, the red has all been a decline, and a few areas have actually been increasing. And remember, this is per capita, so this is in relation to your population growth. So these would be trends you would take into account when you think about healthcare services you need in your community. The next slide, we try to give you some of that, what we would call market share, and then you'll see the out-migration piece right below. This tells us by hospital, by year, where were people going for care from the blue service area, your service area. These are not people coming in, it's these are the people that you take care of. Where are they going for their care? So this shows the market share. What is amazing, about 88% of the people stay in the community and go to your facilities. That's pretty high. You're only losing 10 to 12% leaving the area, and you'll see some of the facilities. What's interesting here though, look at the number of facilities and the others, which is a number smaller. So there's a lot of diffusion, if you will, or a lot of fragmentation of where people go. This makes it a little tough for the district to try to identify a population and redirect it back to local resources, because they're spread all over. Trying to find them and capture them and bring them back is very expensive and hard. But this does tell us there's just a couple of hospitals. You see Loma Linda and Riverside, the county, Cedars. So where there's some out-migration, it's for particular services or maybe high-end services not available. So you should at least be proud of the fact that you have a pretty robust breadth of services taking care of your population here, and people by and large are staying here to use them. And on the next slide, we're just trying to show you again, here's all the services on the left, the hospitals are listed on the right, and it tells you what services that they're providing, what is their market share of those services. So this tells us what is Desert Regional doing, so that's the facility associated with the district, And then we look at the other services. You'll see where JFK is one of our limited services, not quite as robust as Eisenhower and Desert. On the next slide, and I'm going quickly because we're trying to get through this today. This tells us a little bit about payer mix. So to help you understand, so under Medicare, the Medicare HMO is what you might have heard as a Medicare Advantage plan. It's the Medicare HMO. And then you see the Medicare fee-for-service. That would be traditional Medicare. This tells you by payer segment where people are going to which hospitals. So what you would look for is to begin to say, all right, what is it that's happening in terms of our market capture? So we tend to look down here at the bottom and we see how much of the population. So you can see of this 40%, about a quarter of it is in the Medicare HMO. Most of it's fee for service. Then in the Medi-Cal, look at how much more, about two-thirds would really be in the managed care arena. That just tells you to serve these patients, the ones in the HMO, and the HMO, and the HMO is typically through HMO providers that you might find where they're directed to facilities. They're aligned. The hospitals and doctors are aligned to use certain facilities. They move in blocks. They're very driven by contracts. Fee-for-service allows people choice, and they can go between facilities. The next slide is we tried to, at the request of the board, was to begin to get a sense of just what is happening in terms of acute care, the need for services. We have an undersupply, oversupply of services. So what we tried to do for you was to take, and on the left-hand side, you'll see what we call the bed type. So that's a licensed bed type. The state of California designates beds in a licensed category, and they're pretty self-explanatory. And then you'll see the total licensed beds, patient days. We provided the average daily census, which is on any given day, on average, that's the number of patients that would be in those beds. And you'll see we did it for the three facilities. So you see Desert, Eisenhower, and JFK. And then we summarized it, which is the table at the bottom in the middle, to overall say, how are we in terms of capacity resources available between the three facilities and the need for those facilities given the utilization. The most current information we have that's public and in the market is 2015, and each hospital self-reports their data. What this kind of tells us when you look at this is essentially you really have enough beds in total. We have some maldistribution problems in terms of access, some facilities being more full than others, meaning they might not have access. So one way that you begin to see is there access or not would be look in the top table by facility, and you'll see Desert tends to be more full. So if you look at their obstetrics is full, if you look in the critical care area, they're full. They're actually short beds that they would need. Where if you would look, say, at JFK, you'll see much lower occupancy level says there's a fair amount of capacity there. That's how we utilize these tables. It gives you a sense of, do we have enough beds in total? Your real issue is some maldistribution. So in particular, we look then at psychiatric care. So these would be inpatient psych beds and their license. And this is an area that you are short in terms of the community. This wouldn't be a surprise to you, as I mentioned to you, they're just the economics of inpatient psych care are just not great. So people tend not to create capacity here because the payment is not very good. That's just the hard fact is, you probably don't know, but if you were to build a brand new hospital and it's an acute care hospital, you could spend on the very low end in the low $2+ million a bed to as much as $3 million a bed. And trying to get that back on a psychiatric reimbursement is really probably not available. So that's why you don't see people really building new nursing homes. Same thing, low reimbursement, high cost, and in particular, site as well. So people tend to put site units in remodeled capacity, or if a hospital makes available its non-compliant space, meaning it's not seismically compliant, you could put psychiatric services there. It's a lower cost. And then here, again, we just tried to go through and give you a little sense of the service area. And all we had at this time, not talking to Desert, so this was done before we've actually had worked with Desert. So we looked at the service area, what was the need by bed type, and then what was Desert given the trends we had at the time and without their specific knowledge. We also made assumptions about what will happen in the medical community in terms of as more ACOs develop, as you have more bundled payments where you would take if Jennifer's the hospital payment and I'm the physician payment, we bundle it together in one, will tend to reduce the bed need. It shortens the length of stay. It reduces readmissions. So we put in a more robust look at reducing utilization based on new care models. It's frozen. Oh, there you go.
Going back to the first concept.
Okay.
There you go.
So, the takeaways. So, regardless of what the Trump administration does, Medicare will move us to a value-based payment system, meaning there's an expectation we deliver more and better care for the same or a lower price, they have a better value. And CMS, that's Medicare, so they're looking to reduce use. Medi-Cal, it's most likely we will move to a block grant funding of some capacity, which probably means a reduction in dollars, which would mean that there would be lower inpatient and outpatient use in Medi-Cal, because those people would not be accessing care, but it will drive up potentially the ED use, certainly bad debt. There's an oversupply maldistribution of beds, as I mentioned. You have a shortage of access with physicians in the area, even with all the clinics. They're really functionally full. So you're really utilizing a lot of resources. We're just under-resourced in terms of access. And then there's a shortage of ED capacity of the emergency department and then inpatient psych beds. 21 minutes.
He was trying to get away, but he can't get away because you have lots of questions for him, I know. So thank you, Steve. So much to talk about in Steve's market analysis. So let's open this up to the directors for comments and questions. I'd like to remind the public that if you'd like to speak to this issue during the public comment, which we'll have right after the discussion with the directors. If you could give your question cards to Mary at the back table, then we can prepare for the public comment period. So who'd like to go first? Yeah, go ahead, Les. Oh, sorry, there's a mic back here.
So I understand that this is self-reported and OSHPD and whatever, but it seems to me looking at page 31, page 13 of your summary, that the idea that somehow we have an oversupply of hospital beds is counterintuitive to me. And when I look just at Desert, for example, it says your average daily census in 2015 was 228. Well, I know in 2016 it was almost 265 or 270. So I don't know that it increased that much in a year. Do you think that there's some, is my intuitive thinking that we don't have an oversupply real, or are you saying that the facts don't support it?
So I'm just saying, so Desert could be in that position that Desert is short beds, which I believe. In some of their areas, they are short beds. But JFK is over, and Eisenhower. So if you look
But I'm looking at page 13 on your report.
I'm looking at 13.
You said that Desert has 68 excess beds.
Correct.
Overall.
Because it's at 60% utilization as they would report. And we would look at 80 or 85% as being optimally booked.
And I don't believe the 60% utilization.
Well, then you ought to talk to Desert or talk to the state. See, we would agree, because we've worked with Desert on 2016 data, is higher.
Go ahead.
Oh.
This is a little tricky. Director Wortham.
So I think perhaps some of the confusion lies in that during season, there's never enough beds in this community, it seems. So in terms of adjusting, like for the rest of the year when the census is really low, because I know physicians have a lot of time, that's one issue is that the beds that are available are pretty full during season. The other one has to do with staffing. And so there potentially, some of the hospitals would have more patients come in, but I know that there's a huge issue with staffing, especially during the season. And so they don't have the capacity because of staffing. They may have a physical bed, but not the capacity.
Well, I guess I'd like to hear from the hospitals that do they really have empty beds they're not using, and therefore the people that are in the halls are just there because they're in the halls.
So I want to just ask the president of the board how you'd like to handle the dialogue. Is that okay?
Is Michelle comfortable?
First of all, we need you to
use the mic and you can identify yourself.
Hi, I'm Michelle Finney. I'm new to town, been here about 3 weeks, and I'm working with Desert and the tenant facilities in the Coachella Valley as the market CEO. And I was wondering, Steve, if maybe you could talk a little bit about how these numbers relate by way of being midnight census, which doesn't account for your peak times during the day when you have people coming in and people being discharged. And then maybe a little bit too about OSHPOD not necessarily representing your outpatient observations that are cared for in your inpatient beds. So there's other variables that I think really impact these numbers that are worth considering.
Great.
Thank you.
Spoken like a true administrator, right? So why is a bed never really a bed? So what happens is they do count a midnight census, which is really the lower activity time. So it's really what they would call a head on a bed. But in the daytime, those heads on beds might be going out and new people are being admitted. But the rooms aren't ready yet. So people are piling up all over the place, backing up typically in the ED.
If you stand by the podium, you'll be up. You're under the speaker.
Under the speaker, so. So you end up with a lot of congestion, if you will, people banging into each other because you have people going out the door and people coming in the door. In addition to that, it just takes a long time to process people. Tenants usually very good about processing people. They're pretty good on throughputs. And then when you have observation beds today, there is an effort to bring people in and hold them and watch them to see if we can get them released before the 24 hours hits and they become the inpatient. So we would have them in. Maybe they can go home in 8 hours. But now they're occupying a bed or occupying space or backing up somewhere. And I think, to the other point, that seasonality is a big one. So, yeah, and sometimes people have semi-private rooms, like two people in a room, but you only use it as a private room. So we have people backing up because they're only using the rooms one patient instead of two. So a license capacity is higher. It's really what you're talking about in terms of functional capacity. So staffing limitations, one person in a room, but two beds. There's a lot of hospitals are complex, and a bed is never really a bed. Close enough?
Okay. But I would just add generally, and I haven't done it here.
Could you just wait for the mic so everybody can hear, please?
Yeah, I'll just stand here.
I would just add that generally, and I've not done it here, but I have done it in other facilities where we've done what I'd call peak census assessments. Generally, the peak census runs up anywhere between 25 and 30% higher than your midnight census. And again, to as you were saying, I don't know if you have any statistics about patient flow and peak census periods. That's been what I've experienced before. And then the male-female isolation rooms, the other variables that pull things up. So it's
a bed's not a bed.
Okay, other comments from the directors? President
Robinson. Thank you. Very comprehensive report. So in terms of ED beds, you say we have a shortage of ED capacity, yet the Desert Regional is in the process of increasing those beds. Is that going to meet the need?
Can see we're going to drag you into this.
So I don't know what their total expansion is and if it meets the need of the whole valley versus their needs of who uses them. So how about if we let them answer?
I don't have much detail on that, but my perception is that there is bed needs at Desert as well as across the valley.
And seasonality, too, would have a big impact on that.
Question number two.
Shortage of clinics. Do you have an assessment of where those clinics need to be located and how many physicians, where that might take place?
So those specific questions and answers were beyond the scope of what we were asked. But if you look at the maps and the locations, which are in the FIC report, to the east you have less access, meaning sites to go to. The doctors is pretty much wide on the maps, but they have hatched areas. And then if we said the actual numbers of doctors, we were not asked to calculate that. But I can tell you at least when you see those kinds of MUA and HIPSA areas, so it's going to be tens, if not 100 doctors at least in the community, even with all the clinics and as busy as they are.
Thank you. Anybody else? Other comments or questions from the directors? Let's give everybody a minute to think about their comments and questions. Got plenty of time.
Okay. So, the first is where you pointed out that the older, no, not in the older, the 60-year-old and above are using services, and it's about 4.5 to 5 times what the younger is. Not the kind of the
When we met, that's about the rule of thumb.
And so that's critically important information. Then the other, and this is just it isn't important to this report, but on these maps where you have these dotted line, I don't think that's the district boundary today or in the future. I think someone misdrew the east side of that. So I don't. That's not the district I'm familiar with. I just think it doesn't affect any of the medically underserved areas, but I think the boundary line doesn't tie to the boundary.
The red dotted line?
Yeah.
Kirk, you want to comment on that? I'll throw you the mic.
I'm sorry, if Director Matthew's question was the red dotted line, this is not the current district. Current district does not include NDO and some of the portions around there, so.
My guess is someone inputted zip codes and it just drew that, and so I wouldn't get too excited about it.
Okay, we'll take a look because there's partials because it does not go to NDO. It doesn't go west of Cook Street, east of Cook Street in Palm Desert.
Yeah, it's done by zip codes. You get a zip code listed.
Yeah.
So we get a zip code.
It does tie to the data, though.
It does tie to the data.
Right, that's.
Other questions or comments?
sorry.
Yes.
So I want to talk a little bit about psychiatric beds on page 16. Is that up here? Okay. Well, and it, well, it's the current, it sort of says that we have a need of 3 psychiatric beds, and I'm not sure that's right. And then when you look down below, Desert Regional Medical Center need 2026 2 psychiatric beds. I'm just, again, it's counterintuitive to me. Now, maybe my intuition is wrong, but show me facts that support that.
Are you working off the big report or the market report?
I'm
sorry,
the market report. I mean, the reality is there's so much need for psychiatric beds. They don't, it's not that they go somewhere. They don't go anywhere because they don't want to go to Loma Linda or whatever. They just sit in the community and don't get care. So I'm not sure how you know what the need is based on some kind of measure of what the need is. But I just think it's much, much bigger.
So again, we would agree, we're just using the facts and the data that are out there in the public. The need is probably higher, but because it's not paid for, they don't really get in, if you will, these methodologies that forecast beds. We did look at the incidence rates and health status indicators, which show high need.
Well, then how would we use this information in strategic planning?
Then we would take and go to the health status indicators that show the high, if you will, needs, which would drive these numbers higher. You would go, I would hope, and talk to a couple of these providers on the site and see what is their turnaways, what are the discharge planners doing in terms of getting the inpatient services that they're not able to access. Again, we weren't asked to go talk to individuals, and I don't know if the other research did that.
So in a few minutes, we're going to hear from Jenna with the community needs assessment. And after that, you're going to hear from us on the discussions we had with community partners and leaders. And you're going to hear the issue of mental health over and over and over again. So I think Steve's right that it's been covered in other ways. And we'll come back to that issue again later in the afternoon. Other comments, questions, thoughts from the directors? Are we ready to go to public comment, President Rogers? Okay, I think we're going to have to, excuse me, Steve.
Take a quick break.
No, we're going to do public comment.
No, we'll do public comment and then we'll take a break.
Okay, we've got Ezra Kaufman who wants to comment on this, and we're asking our community 3 to 5 minutes to address the board. It's not an open dialogue in terms of its questions for the board. All right, then we're on break for our break between these two.
Great, okay. Thank you.
How long a break?
10 minutes.
10 minutes.
Thank you.
3 years.
Hi. I'm not going to catch up. I have a lot of for this.